Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Her Voice, Ladies Who Write. And in this episode, we will be covering the anarchist political theorist, Emma Goldman. My name is Damian Marty Pope, but my friends call me Dames, and I chose this thinker because of my own personal affinity towards her. As an anarcho-communist myself, I believe that Goldman provides important contextual theory towards a political movement that has long gone misunderstood. Now, I believe that the best place to start with a thinker such as this is the backdrop of her theory, her life and upbringing. Lucky for us, we are in a unique position to hear it all straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. Towards the end of her life, Goldman published an autobiography titled Living My Life, in which she goes into incredible detail about the events that would shape her political outlook and how her experiences would lead her towards anarchism. Goldman was born a middle child in a rather tumultuous family in what is now present-day Lithuania. Her mother had lost her first and second husbands before Emma was born, and by her third, Goldman remarks that any love she once had had died with her first. Goldman's father was that third husband, a failed businessman who took his personal anger and frustrations out on his children, including her, and their mother never lifted a finger to stop him. It's here where I already begin to wonder if Goldman's deep, haunting disgust for authority had its roots in her family life. She certainly didn't have any good role models, and early in her autobiography, she mentions seeing a peasant on the street being whipped and beaten in a similar manner that her father beat her and her siblings, and cites the anger and trauma she felt at this blatant display of power abuse as a bit of anarchist awakening in her. It was here where she realized that that systemic authority could never be trusted as long as it had power over those less fortunate, and that realization served as a sort of catalyst to the events to come. After her adolescence, Goldman found her way to Rochester, New York, where she quickly fell in love with the local anarchists, most notably Alexander Berkman, and apologize if I'm pronouncing this wrong, Johann Most. But these two men would come to greatly influence her views and the course of her life. Most seemed to consider himself a mentor to her, training her in public speaking and teaching her the core values of anarchism. The two shared a great mutual respect for one another, but Goldman often found herself arguing with Most over her viewpoints, which were growing to conflict with his. She ended up leaving her publication with her lover, Alexander Berkman, and what came to follow was the first tangible act of direct action. In order to incite exploited factory workers to revolt against their bosses, Goldman and Berkman became directly involved with organizing the Homestead Strike. While Goldman attempted to fund the workers' livelihoods through prostitution, Berkman took the more aggressive approach and attempted an assassination against Henry Clay Frick, the owner of the factory the workers were striking from. Frick survived, Berkman was sentenced to 22 years in prison, and Goldman was interrogated by authorities trying to prove her involvement in the attempted murder. All in all, it seemed as though this act of strategic violence had failed, and Goldman's fellow anarchists turned against her, including her old friend and mentor, Most. It seemed that her rotten luck was going nowhere fast. As a brief, casual, and altogether insignificant run-in with the attempted assassin of President McKinley in Goldman's personal life was quickly traced back to her, likely so that authorities could use it as an excuse to find something to lock her up for. But their efforts weren't completely in vain, for after they were forced to let Goldman go free after 2 weeks of detainment sparking no evidence of her involvement, she saw herself scorned by her fellow anarchists for the perceived shame she had brought upon their movement. With her old companions gone and her lover in prison, Goldman decided to retreat into nursing work. It was under these conditions that she decided to start her own anarchist publication, and in 1906, Mother Earth was established under a staff of a few radical activists who still stood by her cause, now with a platform and community of their own to speak from, rather than fearing the scorn of other anarchists. Goldman would go on to do a myriad of other work, but unfortunately, as we are pressed for time, I simply can't include it all in one small section, and had to limit this to the most relevant backdrops to her beliefs. Now let's get into her core beliefs and writing. While Emma Goldman did not found the anarchist school of thought, she is widely regarded as one of its most important figures for a reason. Her more rocky working-class beginnings naturally make her more sympathetic to the average person. But what exactly did she preach? Let's use Anarchism and Other Essays, a series of essays published with Mother Earth, which is arguably her most theory-heavy work. In this, we find the ideological foundations that Goldman would go on to expand upon in further writings. She lays out the more personal aspects of anarchism, acknowledging that individualism and collectivism are highly interlocked with one another. In other words, there can never truly be a free collective unless every individual within that collective experiences freedom and equality in the truest sense of the terms. So, how does one achieve such collective freedom? Goldman makes it very clear in her work that theory is never enough on its own. You have to act on your beliefs in some form or another, or else you've essentially just said a lot of pretty words without any tangible effort towards change. This is where Goldman's strategic use of violence comes into play. Her involvement with the attempted Frick assassination, as well as her work with Mother Earth, encapsulates this quite well. To her, nonviolence will never work against a violent authority, so violence is one of the few tools the oppressed have against their oppressors. While this notion is quite controversial on its own, it's important to note that Goldman did not advocate for the use of random, chaotic violence against anyone above society's bottom rung, but wrote heavily in favor of direct action, and the use of violence to meet greater political ends, either as a rallying cry for change, or to set that positive change in motion. Chaos without end is pointless, but you might be asking me now, what exactly is this change that anarchists want? It's here that I believe a lot of the misconceptions about anarchism have cropped up over the years. For one of the main tenets of Goldman's work is a complete dismantling of not only capitalism, but the state itself. If you've ever heard the saying, power corrupts, that's a very simple way of putting it. To her, power is always exploitative of those underneath it, and the entity of the state is one of the worst offenders, even if it masquerades itself as an exception to that rule, as it often does. She touches on this a lot in My Disillusionment with Russia. Where Goldman initially praised the actions of the Bolsheviks, she soon comes to criticize Lenin for essentially becoming exactly what he fought against, an exploitative dictator. Capitalism, to Goldman, is like if an economic system could be a dictator. It forces the working class to sell their bodies day in and day out just to survive, which, to her, is no choice or contract. If a worker cannot survive without selling their labor, they're more like a slave to the constant demands of growth and profit that capitalism demands. There is no choice under capitalism, only the illusion of choice, which is all controlled by the state. They need each other to survive, and one cannot be dismantled without the other. And true human liberation cannot be realized as long as the state authority imposes capitalism onto its citizens. This is perhaps why Goldman was so opposed to incrementalism. To her, an act like voting, which she did not support, was more insulting than liberating. To her, it's like dangling a carrot. Promising change under electoralism, but forcing the working class to participate in their own oppression under the guise of helping themselves. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Dames, this all sounds fine and dandy, but isn't all of this awfully similar to Marxism? And the difference, in my interpretation of her work at least, lies in their perceived end goals, so to speak. It's worth noting that Goldman's work was more reactionary than progressive, if we are to use the true, politically neutral meanings of those words. As in, she wrote in reaction to existing state and political infrastructure, rather than offering wide-scale solutions or proposing big societal overhauls. In my opinion, this isn't inherently a bad thing, for if we take Goldman's notion that theory is supposed to be a start rather than an end, perhaps her goals were more to inspire her readers to reach solutions to problems she pointed out, rather than assuming that she herself had all the answers to society's problems. She definitely doesn't strike me as arrogant in her writing, for she speaks numerous times in her autobiography about being open to changing her opinions as she is presented with more information. Marxism offers that big, full-scale overhaul in its theory, which has one glaring issue that is antithetical to anarchist thought. It maintains state authority. It just changes who holds it. This alone sets Goldman's anarchism apart from traditional Marxism. As to her, anarchism and the state are fundamentally incompatible. Now let's get to our next section, which is her theoretical inspirations for her writing. This is going to be a bit of a shorter section, simply because there isn't a lot to touch on, and for what there is to touch on, there's not much to say about it, to be honest. Now, you may have noticed in my discussion of Goldman's core beliefs that her writing is quite similar to other progressive political theorists. Notably, she draws a lot of inspiration from And I'm very, very sorry if I'm undoubtedly pronouncing this incorrectly. Kropotkin, her far left reading of Nietzsche, and most notably for this course, Mary Wollstonecraft. Goleman's inspiration is most clearly seen within her reasoning for separating herself from the American suffrage movement, for instance, which she touches a lot on in her autobiography. Despite being a staunch advocate for women's rights and liberation, she did criticize the first wave of feminism for its failure to erase the social construct of gender in their activism, as it often didn't challenge notions of the patriarchy or social constructs like gender roles in any concrete way. In other words, Goldman criticized first wave feminism for only wanting legal equality, without reaching for social equality as well. This is a common theme in Wollstonecraft's writing. She champions the idea that men and women are theoretical equals in competence and intellect, if only women could be given the chance to prove it. In this sense, I do believe that Wollstonecraft influenced Goldman's work and views. Her critique of first wave feminism is an anti-gender essential is as anti-gender essentialism as Wollstonecraft's writing is. Now let's get into our fourth and final section, which is my personal praise, critiques, and general thoughts on Emma Goldman's work. Now, it would be disingenuous to talk about Emma Goldman without mentioning where I stand on her issues. As like her, I believe that theory can be best described as a jumping off point rather than an end goal. The world and our place in it is complicated, and thus it would be highly unlikely for one person to figure out that big answer to social inequality, as it were. In that sense, I am always a bit critical of political theorists, regardless of their school of thought, even though similar to my own. But from my perspective, that's the point of political theory as a field of study, to give us the tools we need to critically think and analyze the world around us, and to use that to hopefully find something better than this. This is not a random tangent. That's one of my biggest praises of Goldman's work. She actively acknowledges that theory is useless without action, that you can sit in your ivory tower sipping wine and complaining about the state of the world, but unless you do something of substance to change that, you have no real claim to the moral high ground. Furthermore, I believe she makes a very eloquent and convincing argument towards the use of utilitarian violence, which perhaps is at least part of where anarchism has gotten its tainted reputation. I'm not sure if I would praise or criticize this part of her work, because although Goldman makes clear that violence without cause is morally reprehensible, I cannot make any personal judgment, responsible judgment as to whether or not the misrepresentation of anarchism as a violent political ideology was a tactic employed by its political enemies to cast it in a bad light, or the failing of theorists like Goldman to properly elaborate their arguments to the average layperson. However, I do find her arguments regarding utilitarian violence to be rather convincing, as even just from a logical standpoint, how does a marginalized group win against a violent state authority by using nonviolent tactics? How can you liberate yourself from exploitation just from appealing to a supposed moral nature of an oppressor when that morality might not even be there? How does someone with any cause, with any sense of morality get to a point where they willingly exploit and abuse others? And how can you beat the social systems in place that allow such a thing with good debate skills? When you really break down these barriers and reduce them to their bare essentials, it honestly just seems a little silly to suggest that dismantling them can be a nonviolent act. Maybe, if said oppressors were also nonviolent, but as Goldman suggests in her writing, they're just not. Now, before I channel too much of that version of myself that comes out when I've had one too many at a family function, I believe this is a good note to leave our show off on. We've touched on a lot of Emma Goldman's work tonight, from her humble but tenacious beginnings, to her core beliefs reflected in her provocative and continually relevant work, to her theoretical inspirations that led her to forming these values, and even my own personal reflections on her writing and where they belong in our world today. With this information, I genuinely hope I've managed to change how you view anarchism as a legitimate school of political thought, and a complicated ideology with a whole set of beliefs and values and theory to be respected as much as any other. With much love, I've been Dames, and let's hope that we can work towards a better, fairer, mutual aid society without borders or inequality together. Might seem like a pipe dream, and maybe it is, but that doesn't make striving for something better a waste of time. Because as Emma Goldman would likely say, any tangible action towards that dream makes the world a little better. And isn't that, on its own merits, something worth fighting for? Something to think about, at least. And with that, I bid you goodnight. 'Cause baby-